Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. We've all heard that classic saying about the difference between the left side and the right side of the brain. It goes something like this. The left hemisphere of the brain is logical, deductive, and mathematical, while the left hemisphere is artistic, visual, and creative. But while contemporary neuroscience has dispelled this particular myth of functional asymmetry between the two hemispheres of the brain, the idea of this dichotomy is still commonly brought up in everyday conversations as an excuse for why some people tend to excel in the arts and the humanities, but not in math and science, and vice versa. I know that I've used that line before as a way to justify my asymmetrical SAT scores, low those many years ago. But here I am, with a degree in creative writing, working at the National Academy of Sciences. But this sense that we're either one or the other, left or right, creative or analytical, is nevertheless a very powerful cultural reference that reflects what many believe to be an ongoing rift between science and the humanities. The idea that there's a schism between science and the humanities was most famously articulated in 1959 by scientist and novelist C.P. Snow. He delivered an influential lecture arguing that the failure of communication between what he referred to as the two cultures of modern society, the sciences and the humanities, was a major obstacle to solving the world's problems. Over the years, many public intellectuals have both criticized and praised the strength of Snow's argument. But his idea has endured the test of time and continues to be frequently enlisted for a number of causes whenever a general lack of basic literacy in either the sciences or humanities is assumed to be at the root of the problem. For its part, the National Academies plays a role in exploring the relationship between the science and the humanities. When the National Academy of Sciences home was built in 1924, architect Grosvenor Bertram Goodhue incorporated the work of artists, sculptors, and muralists to adorn the building with striking visual elements. These works define the space, communicate the history of science, and enhance the experience of those who visit the National Academy of Sciences. Continuing in this tradition, the cultural programs of the National Academy of Sciences, or CPNAS, organizes rotating art exhibitions and maintains a permanent art collection that explore relationships among culture and sciences, engineering, and medicine. Additionally, CPNAS hosts a concert series featuring a range of internationally acclaimed musicians and coordinate other special programming that includes lectures on a variety of topics. We recently talked to the Director of Cultural Programs of the National Academy of Sciences, J.D. Telesic, who is deep into the planning for an online symposium on the relationship between visual culture and evolution. This particular event brings together artists, scientists, cultural and medical historians, ethicists, curators, and experts in science-related films and theater, all with the goal of promoting a dialogue to understand the relationship between evolution and visual culture. Telesic talked to us about what inspired this event.
In 2000, there was a very important exhibition curated by Marvin Hefferman entitled Paradise Now, Picturing the Genetic Revolution. This exhibition was the first major exhibition to take a look at contemporary artists who were interested in the meaning and implications of the evolving field of genetics. This exhibition toured the country, and I saw it at one of its stops, which was the Center for Art, Design, and Visual Culture at University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which is one of our partners. I began to discuss with who was then the executive director, David Yeager, and the current director, Sims Gardner, what the response was to this. And they said that one of the criticisms that they had received from the scientists was that the artists, they were making comments and references to work that was being done, and there was no opportunity for the science community to respond. So you see here, this goes back to the original ideal for us is to open up discourse, to communicate. So this was, probably the single factor that prompted us towards the first symposium that we did of this kind, which was visual culture and bioscience. And that was done in 2007. This is basically a sequel to that. And since we've just come out of this wonderful year and a half of Darwin celebrations, the theme of evolution seems to be very appropriate and timely. People are thinking about it. So what we are hoping to do is that this would move it forward.
The event itself is entirely online. There's no specific place where people are meeting. Instead, the experts are logging on right from the middle of what they're doing in their lab, in their office, or in their studio. The panelists will post to a discussion, and then the public will be able to write in and ask questions to become part of the discourse. To kick off the discussion, Telesic and Kevin Finneran, editor-in-chief of Issues in Science and Technology and moderator for the symposium, interviewed two well-respected and prominent figures, one from the world of evolutionary biology and another from the world of art. E.O. Wilson, a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer and NAS member, has written extensively on the need to unify science and the humanities. Eduardo Katz coined the term bio-art in the 1980s for a new field of artwork that employs the tools of biotechnology, using actual living matter as its medium. It could be argued that his writing and artwork have helped to shape a new aesthetic that has grown out of new advancements in science and technology. Together, these two keynote interviews set the tone for discussion and illustrate some of the perspectives held by scientists on the one hand and artists on the other. Telesic talks about how Wilson and Katz differ on their views of the relationship between science and art.
I guess the main difference that comes to my mind is, like any discussion that addresses the areas between art and science, there's always a basic question that comes up is, what is the objective? How are these going to fit together? What does it look like when there's actually some connection between the two? Is it just for the sake of discussion? Is it, you know, to foster new ideals? Or how can it actually, what is the practice that would actually bring these together? Wilson and Katz are, I would say, pretty much opposite extremes on this. Wilson feels strongly that both disciplines should strive for better collaborations and that neither side have really come to the table to do that. Katz feels like the problem is oversimplified by talking about it in terms of just art and science, that there's a constellation of disciplines out there that shape our culture. So they're already kind of coming back from it, the standpoint is, as a scientist, how can this further science? And as an artist, they're saying, well, how can this, you know, further our mission, our ideals of an artist to talk about culture and the impact of science? So one feels that they should come together. The other one feels like the benefit is from the discussion between two epistemologies. Both of them will agree very strongly that this is very fertile ground for exploration.
Fertile ground indeed. It is clear from historical accounts that science and art share a complex relationship, with each domain influencing the other in profound ways. For instance, it was an artist, Louis Daguerre, who invented the daguerreotype photographic process in the 19th century. This represented a landmark development in the field of photography, a tool that has been the cornerstone of scientific investigation for well over a century. Conversely, advances in genetics and biology have provided the means necessary for artists like Katz to pioneer new directions in artistic expression in the form of bioart. The work done by CPNAS might be unexpected in an institution known for its left-brain leanings, but it is the connectedness, not the division, between the hemispheres that is revealed through the programs they sponsor. And though I usually close by inviting you to download a free science policy report from the Academy's website, this time, try something a little different. Log on to the Visual Culture and Evolution Symposium at vcande.org. Explore your right brain options further, find out more about the symposium, get a list of the panelists involved, and listen to the keynote interviews with E.O. Wilson and Eduardo Katz. Later, you can pose your own question to the panel of experts. The symposium begins Monday, April 5th, and runs through Wednesday, April 14th. To find out more in general about the cultural programs of the NAS, visit cpnas.org. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.